All right, my great pleasure now to be talking with Dr. Lisa Delisio of Salem State University. And Dr. Delisio, welcome to MSO.
Thank you.
Your name came up over a Salem, I think it was actually a Salem State press release, but it had to do with the city of Salem, regarding something called the F. Carroll Sargent Arboretum, awarded level one accreditation by ArbNet Accreditation Pro. What does that all mean? And let's just start by mentioning that you are a professor of biology. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right. What's that all mean? What's an arboretum?
So an arboretum is a living collection of trees, shrubs, and woody vines. So it's really a botanical garden that focuses on woody species. And an arboretum usually has some aesthetic value for visitors, natural beauty, and it's also a place to share knowledge about plants with the public and to provide a living specimens for a scientific study.
In terms of your involvement with that, having a class, what did you take your students what was your involvement with that?
So this project is what we call a community-based participatory research project. So it's a collaboration of equal partners between myself representing Salem State University, president of the Friends of Greenlawn Cemetery, and Bob LeBlanc, who's representing the city. He has multiple roles with the city. He's a superintendent of cemeteries, and he's also an arborist. So the three of us have worked together to, along with my students, and the Cemetery Commission, to get accreditation for the arboretum. And one of the steps that we had to undertake to do that was that we needed to come up with a beginning list of species that exist at the Arboretum. So I took my students on a series of field trips to the Arboretum where we identified, I think we ended up with 25 to 30 different species that we could say are definitely present in the Arboretum, and that became part of the application to ArbNet, this international organization that certifies and accredits arboreta.
You know, it reminds me, at a much higher level, I went to high school in Texas, and I had to do a biology a collection of bugs down there. And I don't know if you know how big the bugs are in Texas, but they're big.
Everything's big in Texas.
Yeah, well, it's just true. But the idea was we had to, you qualify them by the kingdom, the order, the phylum, all that stuff, and we had to figure out, what they were. Is it a similar process that your students would go through in identifying the flora that are in the arboretum?
Yes, that's right. So what you did, you were looking at what we call the taxonomy or the interrelationships and names of insects, mm-hmm. and we're doing that with the trees and the shrubs at the arboretum.
Okay, right? Fascinating. And the importance, tell me a little bit about ArbNet. What is that?
Right, so ArbNet is an international organization that does accredit arboreta, mm-hmm. And they bring together information from arboreta around the world and provide resources to arboreta. So ArbNet, it's an interactive, collaborative, international community of arboreta and all sorts of people who focus on trees. So that includes people who are academics like me, students and the public from around the world who are interested in arboreta.
Well, congratulations on an accomplishment. It's pretty cool. And biology was not my strong. You know, the thing is, when I went to high school, Dr. Delisio, I got to tell you, there were three parts to an atom: the proton, the neutron, and the electron. So that's it for me. and biology is pretty similar, but fascinating stuff. And I do want to get to what you do at Salem State University. But first, before we do that, in your background, on the Salem State page listing the staff, it says, of course, where you went to school in Tufts, but it says something, you worked at MIT sequencing C. elegans DNA, contributing to Nobel Prize winning work on programmed cell death. What the heck? Can you tell me in layman's term what that is? Because it sounds fascinating.
Sure. So C. elegans is a microscopic worm.
Okay.
And C. elegans is what's called a model organism. In other words, it is easy to manipulate in the lab, and it has a lot of things in common with people. So, believe it or not, so we can study things like neurological diseases or congenital heart issues or kidney disease, or things like programmed cell death in C. elegans, and then understand how that can be applied perhaps for medicine, human medicine. Programmed cell death is something that happens naturally and doesn't, in some cases, doesn't cause problems. For example, in the womb, we all have webs between our fingers and toes, and those cells die in a programmed sort of a way. And allow us to have separated fingers and toes. But then it can also go wrong and be involved in diseases like Alzheimer's disease and other degenerative diseases. So when I was early in my academic career, after graduating from Tufts, I worked as a research assistant or lab assistant in a lab, Bob Horvitz's lab at MIT, and I helped to sequence DNA from the worms of the lab. And the I later discovered that the work that I had done there was acknowledged in Bob Horvitz's Nobel Prize.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
I was listed in the acknowledgement.
That must be pretty cool. Do you have like in sports, you have a trophy room where you have all this stuff listed and stuff and people can go in? That's awesome.
Yeah,
that is way cool. And some of the stuff, my daughter just finished her third year at Drexel. She's a biomedical engineering student, and this summer she's working on an Alzheimer's project through a grant down there at Drexel Medicine. And I told her, when she gets that figured out and you figure out how to stop cell death, let me sign up. I'll be the first to get in, okay? I want to know.
No kidding, right? I'll be right in line with you.
I'm going for 200, so my age doesn't bother me right now. But the other thing I think that really drew me to wanting to talk with you was your interest in promoting women in the sciences. I recently talked with a woman down in Texas who was one of two female flight controllers for the space shuttle program, I learned of Maria Mitchell when I was teaching astronomy, and there are just so many opportunities now, I think, for young women that weren't there. I started teaching in 1972, I think it was, and when I was in high school, women had three choices. Girls had three choices. You could become a nurse, a teacher, or a secretary. But it's just so much, there's so much untapped potential right now that I love seeing these courses that you're promoting. So maybe talk a little bit about that, about how you promote that and your interest in it.
Sure. So right now I'm working on a few papers that will be on 19th century women botanists in Essex County.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Yeah. So when I was doing some work a few years back, I had a sabbatical, and I was at the Peabody Essex Museum looking at their archival collection of dried pressed plant specimens, which are mainly from the 1800s in Essex County. And I was handling these, amazing, beautiful and scientifically important specimens, and noticing that a lot of them were made by women who were not in the histories of botanical study in Massachusetts, or who were just barely mentioned, but they seem to have done an incredible amount of really very important scientific work at a very high level. So I, with my graduate assistant, Lindsay Hall, we explored the archival records, letters, newspaper articles, diaries of these women at various archival centers and across Massachusetts. And so I'm writing about their work now. They were working at a time when botany was extremely popular as a pastime in New England and across the country. It was one of the most popular hobbies was to go out and identify and collect plants during that period. And it was also a time when the field of botany was being professionalized. And as that was happening, women were being pushed to the side. So it was important to me to highlight these women and their experiences and their contributions, because I think it's important for us to know that women made important scientific contributions, but then their names and their work got buried.
I think that is so important. The movie and the book Hidden Figures came out, you know, in the last several years, and I had read everything about the space program since 1958, but I never knew about those women. And they're being honored now, maybe a little too late, I think. But the idea is that, you know, it is part of our culture, part of our heritage. And it's so important, I think, for kids, for both genders, to see that when they're going up through high school. So good luck with that. Any idea when you might be publishing?
Well, I've just finished the draft of the first paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I've sent it out to readers before sending it to a journal. It'll be published in a journal, but I hope to do some more public-facing work regarding these women soon.
Wonderful, well. Wonderful. Now, the other thing that obviously catches my interest is conservation biology with respect to, you mentioned, you know, the 1800s, but I read something recently about, you know, the temperature change globally and how it has spiked in the last 100 years or so. What is it that you teach in terms of conservation biology? Does that relate to atmospheric conditions and things like that?
Sure. So conservation biology is really an applied science. It's relatively young, really got started in a formal way in the 70s and 80s. So it's pretty young compared to a lot of other scientific fields. It's multidisciplinary, so it draws in economics and people in all of their mm-hmm. many facets. So, it does include climate change. So, it's really focused on the management of nature and of Earth's biodiversity with the aim of protecting species and habitats and ecosystems and reducing rates of extinction. Climate change is one of the major concerns with regard to extinction. It's not something that's easily contained, right? So there are a lot of things where we can control. We can create a protected area, for example, that supports a habitat, that supports many species, but even that protected area will be impacted by climate change.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. I read an article a long time ago by Isaac Asimov, and I think he was a professor of biochemistry at BU at the time, maybe around 1950 or so, and he wrote an article about the fact that the ecosphere could support 8 billion people, and after that it would just kind of collapse, and we're almost there. Are we in dire straits right now? Is he right?
the carrying capacity of our planet for humans has been predicted many times and has been surpassed many times.
Good.
So as we improve our technologies, we find more ways to support humans on the planet. It doesn't mean that we're not doing damage. We're currently in the sixth mass extinction event. We are losing species at a rate that has really never been seen before. And we're using resources at an incredible pace.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Nobody really knows the true carrying capacity of the planet. The human population is growing very, very quickly. So I don't have an answer for you about whether we're about to blow it, or how that's going to happen.
I didn't expect an answer, but I appreciate the explanation. And I didn't realize, yeah, that makes sense with technology. And the more we learn, the more we're able to hopefully fix things as we go along. Can I ask you about your courses at Salem State, and maybe because it looks to me, just by looking at the bio here, that you teach pretty much all levels.
I do. Yes. Yeah. Most recently, I've been teaching ecology and the environment, conservation biology, and botany.
Mm-hmm.
But I have taught intro level biology, you know, ecology and evolution type courses, and I also typically have one or two research students working.
Well, I think my final question is, how has the state of emergency affected your teaching at Salem State? You know, obviously kids had to go home. You were working in classrooms, I'm sure, and in labs. What has been the change for you in regards to how your classes are were structured, maybe for the spring and maybe what's coming up in the fall?
Sure. So in mid-March, we ended on-campus classes and had to make a pretty quick pivot to distance teaching and learning. I was, for my botany course, I was able to have my students move to doing an analyzing a historical document that listed all of the plants at the Sargent Arboretum that were present in 1942. And we've made great progress on that, and it will really inform our work going forward.
I think that's, go ahead.
So that was good.
Yep.
And for the fall, I'm planning distance learning for all of my courses. I'm working with instructional design specialists and technological specialists and people who specialize in the teaching and learning in the online environment. And I'm able, and I expect to be able to offer some really outstanding courses at a distance in the fall.
I have no doubt about that. And how will that affect labs? You do have some lab work, I'm sure, in probably all of your courses.
Only one of my current courses has lab work, and that's my botany course. So students will be able to... I'm sorry, my son is coming up the stairs.
It's okay. It's
I hear him coming up. Students will be able to use... plants that are growing in their yards or neighborhoods or homes, or to use even produce and also outstanding images to do work on the structure of plants, and then they'll be able to use work photos and data that are being currently collected by community members at Sargent Arboretum for the remainder of the work, and that will be authentic research that they'll take place at a distance. So they will be building new knowledge and science, particularly around the Arboretum, and making a real contribution, even if they're doing it from their homes.
That is tremendous. And if I were coming out of high school or an undergraduate student, as long as you weren't talking about bugs, I'd sign up for your classes without hesitation.
We have a lot of returning students, so you'd be welcome.
Okay. That is Dr. Lisa Delisio, who is a professor of biology at Salem State University.